Capital Report is underwritten in part by Hopping Green and Sams, saluting its client Seaside Community Development Corporation for supporting arts and culture in South Walton County. I'm David Powell of Hopping Green and Sams in Tallahassee.
The Able Trust, encouraging businesses to hire someone with a disability. More information about the benefits of hiring people with a wide range of abilities is available on the web at lookatmyability.org. The Able Trust, because people want to work. And from the Florida Historic Capital Museum, presenting Navigating New Worlds, Identity, Perception, and Politics in Florida, an exhibit showcasing rare maps and prints from the Michael W. and Dr. Linda Fisher collection. Information at flhistoriccapital.gov. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
The question of allowing domestic partnerships in Florida flared up a hot debate in the Senate this week.
We need to uphold the Constitution to protect everybody. Everybody here needs equal civil rights in this state.
Government watchdog group Integrity Florida responds to critics questioning, of all things, the group's integrity.
You know, research institutes have to have funding to keep the lights on and to do research.
Lawmakers debate whether power companies should continue to charge its customers for nuclear plants before they're even built. And we'll hear why thousands of students in Florida are failing to get a high school diploma despite staying in school. I'm Tramell Gomes, and that's all coming up on Capitol Report. This week, a bill allowing domestic partnerships in Florida had its first committee hearing, but stalled over some lawmakers' concern that it's unconstitutional.
By telling somebody that when they go to the hospital and may be dying, that their partner or the person that they love can't come to see them. Is there a compelling state interest in that?
Well, after such passionate debate, Jessica Palumbo reports, the bill's sponsor has chosen to do some work to the bill to make it just right.
It looked like the domestic partnership bill, Senate Bill 196, was headed for a committee vote. The measure would allow any couple, gay or straight, to register their relationship and be granted all the rights and privileges of a married couple. Senator Jeff Clemens, a Democrat from Lake Worth, said years down the road, people would remember this moment.
People who stood up for the rights of Floridians are going to be viewed as pioneers. And it's almost shameful that we have to be viewed as pioneer, because I don't see myself as one. And I know the other people who support this bill don't see themselves as pioneers either. This is simply a bill that allows our constituents to be themselves and puts an end to really the bigotry that seems to happen in our communities when somebody who loves someone else can't act on that.
But others weren't convinced the bill would pass constitutional muster.
Sad to say, I really can't support this bill today because it is too broad. And it's just like a walking lawsuit as far as I'm concerned.
That's Senator Nancy Dietert, a Republican from Venice. Like other opponents of the bill, she had doubts about how it would stand up to the amendment 62% of voters passed in 2008. It said marriage was between a man and woman and banned the state from recognizing same-sex unions that resembled marriages. Dietert wasn't convinced by testimony from lawyer Mary Meeks, who found that the bill was constitutional. Meeks said the proposed domestic partnerships would differ from marriage in hundreds of ways, including one obvious one.
If you're a registered domestic partner, whatever those rights are, they don't travel with you outside of the state of Florida. Marriage obviously is. It's portable. Those rights are recognized outside of the state. They go with you no matter where you go.
But other speakers representing the Florida Prayer Network, the Florida Baptist Convention, and Florida Conference of Catholic Bishops said domestic partnerships are too close to marriage for their comfort. Catholic Conference spokesman Michael Sheedy said the state shouldn't blur the line between the two.
Marriage and family life in our society is struggling, is declining. And so, unfortunately, by broadening the definition of what constitutes a family or creating more confusion about that, we don't necessarily really help that situation.
Census data show about 6% of the households in Florida are unmarried partners. That includes more than 319,000 same-gender couples. Several cities like Sarasota and Orlando already have domestic partner registries, which grant people a small list of rights, including hospital and prison visitation. Other places like the city of Venice and Leon County are considering them. But State Representative Joe Saunders, an Orlando Democrat and one of the first openly gay Florida lawmakers, says the patchwork of domestic partner laws isn't good enough.
Can any of you imagine, those of you who are married or those of you who have partners, what it would be like in a moment when you're rushing your partner to the hospital to try and remember county borders.
And Vicki Nance, who lives in Orlando, says Florida needs to prevent things like what happened to her friend Joyce. When Joyce's partner of 10 years, Claudia, died in hospice, Joyce started making funeral arrangements, only to be told she wasn't allowed to because she wasn't legally family.
No one should have to endure the inhumanity that was endured by our friend Joyce at the very worst moment of her life.
Just before the committee could vote on the bill, sponsor Eleanor Sobel decided to postpone it for reworking rather than risk it dying. She says she's open to significantly narrowing down the list of rights that would come with domestic partnerships just to get something passed.
We need to uphold the Constitution to protect everybody. Everybody here needs equal civil rights in this state.
Regardless of what happens in Florida, a forthcoming U.S. Supreme Court decision could change the definition of marriage nationwide. California's Proposition 8, similar to Florida's amendment defining marriage between a man and a woman, and the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, will be challenged next month. If they are found unconstitutional, marriage rights for all people could extend nationwide. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jessica Palumbo.
A couple of weeks ago, Tom Flanagan reported on all the bad press surrounding Enterprise Florida, the state's public-private organization that does economic development. It mostly stemmed from a report by government watchdog group Integrity Florida and Free Press and free market advocate Americans for Prosperity, which held a joint Capitol News conference. Integrity Florida Chief Dan Krasner presented a highly critical report entitled Enterprise Florida, Economic Development or Corporate Welfare. Since then, Integrity Florida's integrity was called into question because the nonprofit produced research funded by Americans for Prosperity, which is run by the politically influential Koch brothers. Dan Krasner joins the program and tells his side of the story following the fallout.
Integrity Florida presently has a 5-member board of directors. We were at one point a 7-member board. Two of our board members left, and you know, I think it's because we're building a different model. You know, Integrity Florida is about bringing a broad and diverse set of stakeholders together from across the political spectrum to fight corruption in government, to pass ethics reform.
So some of the critics were pointing out that Americans for Prosperity is run by the Koch brothers, and they feel that it shouldn't have gone down that road of accepting funds from that organization. What do you say to that?
You know, research institutes have to have funding to keep the lights on and to do research. You would think those in the business community would think they were getting a more fair shake by others in the business community funding a study to find out if big government subsidies to a handful of big corporations are the right way to grow our economy. You know, our research was 100% accurate. We stand by it.
So when it comes to Integrity Florida, are you trying to restore the faith in what you guys are known for? You're a resource since you've been established in many media outlets, including ours. We rely on you. We go to you for nonpartisan, unbiased account. Can we still rely on you in this way in light of how you've done your dealings, especially with Americans for Prosperity?
Yeah, Integrity Florida was established in January 2012. We've been around for over a year. We've published 7 research reports since our founding on ethics reform, campaign finance reform, and taking a tough look at government transparency and accountability, the need for more of that at Enterprise Florida, and to follow all public money. We've been tough on the issue of corruption. We've been fair on the people.
And we can follow your organization's money.
Absolutely.
How are you guys funded?
Integrity Florida, on our website, integrityflorida.org, we list every single donor to our organization. You can see all of our donors, see our board members, see all of our research. We're an open book. That's all we're asking for from government. You know, we're fighting corruption every day. We're proud to do it. We're honored to reach out and connect with your listeners, with you, Tramiel, and others, to share our research and to have important discussions that we need to have in Florida. Our state's number one in corruption, and that's not acceptable.
All right. Anything else you'd like to add that I didn't ask, sir?
It's just been a tremendous honor to get up every day with Integrity Florida and our mission to promote integrity in government and to expose public corruption. We've helped build a statewide movement for ethics reform, campaign finance reform, and to finally hold our government accountable. And it's great to see legislative leaders of both parties actively engaged in these issues. We have an opportunity in Florida to see historic ethics reform, campaign finance reform, and government accountability and transparency initiatives this session. So it's been an honor to be part of that effort, and the fight continues.
That was Dan Krasner with Integrity Florida. still to come on Capitol Report, we hear why more than 39,000 Florida students don't register on Florida's graduation rate, even though they've completed high school.
So that's a lot of the folks that are in that other 25% that are not dropouts. They've got a credential, but it's not the standard diploma.
A group of Florida senators say they've got a solution for nuclear cost recovery that balances the needs of the consumer and the needs for different sources of energy.
We're also putting provisions that we believe will protect the consumer, but it will also provide ample opportunity for the energy needs of our state.
And a veteran reporter gives her take on the saga of disgraced Republican Party of Florida Chair Jim Greer, whose case did not go to trial. Every year, thousands of students fail to get a standard Florida high school diploma despite staying in school. Those students aren't considered dropouts, but they aren't counted as graduates either. Instead, as Lynn Hatter reports, those students are falling into a bit of diploma limbo.
According to the federal government, Florida's graduation rate is around 74.5%, but that doesn't mean a quarter of students dropped out. Instead, as the Florida Department of Education's Jane Fletcher explains, not every student who completes high school is counted as a graduate.
If you get a special diploma, if you get a GED, or if you get a certificate of completion, then you're not counted as a graduate in the graduation rate. So that's a lot of the folks that are in that other 25% that are not dropouts. They've got a credential, but it's not the standard diploma.
Students who receive credentials other than the state's standard diploma are placed in a category called percent not graduating. More than 39,000 students, almost 21% of them, fell into this category. The GED is the most popular option for students returning to school, and people of all ages get them. Take 64-year-old Edmund Kelly. He moved from Georgia to Florida back in 1975 and retired from a job with the city of Tallahassee.
You know how it is when you're young and you're hot-headed. And, well, my grandmama, she raised me, so she said, well, I'd rather you go down there with your uncle and, you know, to see you keep on being in trouble. It's more than I can handle because, you know, she knows she was getting about ready to leave out, so.
Kelly, who was part of the crew that built Florida's newer Capitol building, says he was 16 years old when he stopped going to school, and he even lied about his age to get jobs. At the other end of the spectrum is 16-year-old Michaela Rain Bryant, who transferred out of her charter school and into the Leon County Adult Education Center.
I figured that it's going to be like a long time before I finish school, and I just want to, you know, get it done with so I can help my mom. Because she had me when she was, you know, in her mid-30s, so she's kind of older now, and I want to, you know, give her some helping hand because my dad doesn't really do much.
Most of the center's students are like Michaela. They're transfers or former dropouts and are usually between the ages of 16 and 25. Leon's Adult Education Center awards about 300 GED-based diplomas a year, says Barbara Van Camp, the school's principal. And while it's a good credential to have, it's not quite the same as having that standard high school diploma. For one thing, the chances of getting into a university with a GED are slim.
Most of our students attend a community college. We've had students that wanted to go in the military. They would graduate from here with the State of Florida High School Diploma, enter community college, earn 15 hours, and then they're military eligible for some of those.
So they're not eligible straight out, though?
I'm saying right now, no.
Last year, 2,100 students received GEDs, and they count as non-graduates. Also in that category are the more than 34,000 students who either took too long to graduate or didn't complete all the state's requirements, like passing the FCAT or end-of-course exams. Also not counted in Florida's federal graduation rate are students with disabilities who earn special diplomas. And that leaves a whole lot of kids, almost a quarter of them, seemingly in diploma limbo. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
So Some say utility companies are taking advantage of a Florida law letting the companies start charging their customers for nuclear power plants before they even start construction. Now Regan McCarthy reports, a group of lawmakers is looking to crack down on the practice while maintaining an avenue for those companies to build their nuclear plants.
In 2006, lawmakers passed a law known as the state's Nuclear Cost Recovery Provision that lets utility companies charge their customers for nuclear power plants before they even start building them. The idea was to help companies pay for building the plants in order to expand the state's energy portfolio and reduce dependence on more traditional sources. And Senator Jack Latvala says when lawmakers passed the rule, it probably made sense for the state at the time.
Who knew that natural gas prices would come down as much as they've come down? They were very high back then. Who knew that fracking would become a widely used process to produce new supplies of natural gas? Who knew that we would go into an economic recession that would actually slow or actually for a period of time stop the population influx into our state? They made determinations based on the projections that they had in good faith at that time, but times have changed.
And Latvala says it's something his constituents are starting to get pretty concerned about. The Republican from Clearwater is joining a group of several other senators from the Tampa area to make changes to the law. The proposed bill will be sponsored by Senator John Legg of Lutz. It would create an adjustable interest rate for money borrowed from construction. It would impose a deadline for when construction on the plant must begin. And if the company doesn't complete the project, the proposal requires the company to return any money it earned from the project. And Legg says this is just an example of lawmakers learning as they go, saying it reminds him of an old Mark Twain saying.
When he was a boy of 14, his father was so ignorant he could hardly stand to have the old man around. But when he got to be 21, he was astonished by how much his father had learned in 7 short years.
Meanwhile, Representative Michelle Raywinkle Vasalinda, a Democrat from Tallahassee, calls the proposal a Band-Aid.
Or even could be a whitewash, telling consumers that they've done something and then not doing anything, really, not really doing anything. We need to move this state forward, and this half measures just doesn't move us forward.
Raywinkle Vasalinda has her own legislation which would completely repeal the state's nuclear cost recovery rule. And she says she sees Senator Legg's bill as an attempt to block her bill from getting through.
The utility companies do not want repeal. They are very, very strong in this state. They're all over, you know, all these senators and House members.
But Legg says the legislation is not intended to block Raywinkle Vasalinda's bill and adds he's not ruling a full repeal out as a possibility.
By going forward with this approach, what we feel is we're bringing the dialogue out. We're having this conversation, but we're also putting provisions that we believe will protect the consumer, but it will also provide ample opportunity for the energy needs of our state with the energy companies to step forward and be partners and part of the solution and not part of the problem.
Meanwhile, the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, which launched a legal case against the nuclear cost recovery law because the group says the law is unconstitutional and unclear, is applauding lawmakers for looking into the issue. Susan Glickman is a spokesman for the organization. She says a repeal would be preferable, but she's glad to see the conversation getting started.
I appreciate their leadership, but it's a long road, and we need to have something that's going to protect consumers. And the only thing that's going to protect consumers is having a better utility planning process.
Representative Raywinkle Vasalinda has already filed her legislation to repeal the law. It's House Bill 4003. The group of senators have not yet filed their proposal. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tramell Gomes. A Republican-backed proposal to reduce the number of former inmates going back into Florida's prisons is now taking shape in the form of a bill. But as Sasha Cordner reports, some unions and even some Republicans are not entirely sure about the smart justice idea.
Republican Senator Thad Altman of Melbourne says the state can do more to help nonviolent offenders who leave the prison system.
Picture yourself riding a bus with $50 in your pocket and nothing else. You've just been released from prison. You're a convicted felon. You have no support group. How long is that $50 going to last you? And that's what we're doing to a lot of our inmates.
He says if the state doesn't do much for the inmates when they leave, then they will likely revert back to old behaviors and go back to prison.
It's no wonder we have such a high recidivism rate. And it's no secret that our criminal justice system is pretty much a revolving door. Something has to be done.
The aim is to make sure former inmates don't come back to prison after their release. So Altman says he's taking matters into his own hands and sponsoring Senate Bill 1032 that would create at least one correctional reentry facility for eligible nonviolent offenders who served the last 3 years of their prison sentence. It would also provide them with government-issued ID cards upon release to make it easier for former inmates to find a job. The so-called Smart Justice proposal is the work of the Florida Smart Justice Alliance, an initiative that's the outgrowth of many business leaders brainstorming ideas about cost-effective ways to do public safety. The bill has several backers, including its House sponsor, Representative Dennis Baxley of Ocala, a Republican. It also got the support of incoming House Democratic leader Representative Darrell Rousson of St. Petersburg.
If you always do what you've always done, you will always get what you've always got. And in this instance, it's been broken. When you have captured a person's body, at the same time, we must capture their minds and their souls and give them treatment.
And it also has the support of Florida Smart Justice Alliance President and CEO Barney Bishop.
Critics, mainly unions with protectionist agendas, want you to believe a lot of things that simply are not true. They will tell you that this legislation would violate the 85% rule or lead to the early release of inmates. This is not true in any way or fashion. They will tell you that this bill privatizes prisons. That's not true either.
Well, it's everything to do with privatization.
That's Ron Silver with the Teamsters Union, which represents thousands of correctional officers across the state. Technically, the bill will not privatize prisons, but the measure does allow for private providers to operate the correctional reentry facilities intended to help inmates reenter society. Silver says there's no reason for the bill since the state is already doing good work now, and there's no need for a private vendor to run any of the reentry facilities.
It does not reduce costs. It does not provide security for the communities where these criminals are going to be out and doing their work release programs. It doesn't do anything different than we're doing right now. We have drug programs within the Department of Corrections right now. We have mental health programs.
And Senate President Don Gates may not be sold on the idea either. In an interview with the News Service of Florida, Gates says he's not so sure the state needs to change what it's doing so far. He pointed to Florida's crime rate, which is at a 41-year low.
So apparently what we've done not only is working, but it reversed what really was a crime wave in our state. And we did that by being tough on criminals. If it's working, I'm not sure we should change it.
Meanwhile, a spokeswoman from the Florida Department of Corrections says her agency is not ready to say at this time whether it's for or against the proposal, but she does point to one of the governor's budget recommendations, which the department praised. It's for $5.5 million to open the Gadsden Correctional Reentry Center with a targeted adult basic education and vocational focus. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Finally, a veteran newspaper reporter often called the most feared woman in Florida gives her take on the case of former Republican Party of Florida Chair Jim Greer. Tom Flanagan reports Lucy Morgan shared her thoughts with the Capital Tiger Bay Club today.
The newspaper was called the St. Petersburg Times when Lucy Morgan signed on as a reporter back in 1968. Today, the paper is the Tampa Bay Times, and Morgan told Tiger Bay members she'd sort of hoped to cover one more big story before retiring.
But I really wanted to see a trial and see what would happen and come with all of this. However, I didn't want to spend 2 weeks in Orlando watching one, so it's a mixed blessing.
The trial had been set for February 11th. On the very day it was to begin, the defendant, former Republican Party of Florida Chair Jim Greer, pleaded guilty to multiple counts of fraud, grand theft, and money laundering. But Morgan says it's likely there were other people involved.
Greer himself described in deposition a group of legislative leaders who were spending like drunken sailors. That's some of the testimony we missed by not having a trial. I would have loved to have had more identification of the drunken sailors and what they might have done with it.
The public, Morgan says, will also be spared the details of numerous junkets with many high-powered Florida Republicans on the guest list. What info that is available came from former party executive director Delmar Johnson and apparently involved then-party finance chief Harry Sargent.
There were frequently for men-only trips that involved women who were essentially paid to be there. Then, but Delmar added the detail of seeing a golf cart driven by one of Harry Sargent's employees that was filled with prostitutes.
That allegedly happened in the Bahamas in January of 2008. Greer's associations also included then-Republican Governor Charlie Crist, as well as former U.S. Senator and longtime Crist political pal George Lemieux. Morgan says one of Greer's biggest problems was that he had so few other supporters.
Greer, who had been hand-selected by Charlie at the advice of Lemieux, quickly became hated by everyone else in the party. He was in the depositions. He's described as an arrogant bully, a spendthrift, just always demanding. Every place he went had to be equipped first with peanut M&Ms, Diet Coke, and Maker's Mark, a fairly good bourbon.
At the height of his power, Greer routinely stayed in hotel rooms costing up to thousands of dollars a night. Morgan says his accommodations will soon be somewhat more modest.
He faces sentencing next month. Could get as much as 3.5 years. My guess, looking at sentencing guidelines and the fact that he has no felony conviction in his background, would put it closer to 18 months of what he'll come out of it with.
And what about the other players in the Jim Greer saga?
I actually think that some of these people may be worse off for their not having been a trial than they would have been with a trial, because the trial itself might have been less spectacular than some of the facts in the background that we know from reading depositions and discovery.
A notable exception to that, Morgan believes, is Charlie Crist, the man who put Greer in the position that led to his downfall. Now a Democrat, Crist's approval ratings remain significantly higher than his successor, Republican Rick Scott. And it's widely assumed that Crist is gearing up for another gubernatorial run. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Tom Flanagan.
And one final note, it has been a good ride over the years with me as your host of Capitol Report. But it's now time for me to pass the baton to a dear colleague, Tom Flanagan, who will be sitting in this host seat as I pursue other opportunities and projects. Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Tom Flanagan, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Jessica Palumbo. Thanks also to public radio stations around the state. Taylor Cox provided technical assistance for Capitol Report, and I'm Tramell Gomes, inviting you to join us next week for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org.
Capitol Report is underwritten in part by Hopping Green & Sams, saluting its client Seaside Community Development Corporation for supporting arts and culture in South Walton County. I'm David Powell of Hopping Green & Sams in Tallahassee.
The Able Trust, helping donors make a difference through planned giving, putting donations to work so people with disabilities can too, on the web at abletrust.org. The Able Trust, because people want to work. And from the Florida Historic Capitol Museum, illuminating the connection between the people of Florida and their political institutions through programs of civic education, historic interpretation, and preservation. Information at 850-487-1902. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.